just yap for a little bit. Yeah. So
nothing important. Okay, so important thing to know, the competition has not ended. I have questions during the study that if whichever team answers them first, that's some bonus points. So if you're worried, if you're like, I don't think my team's winning right now, doesn't matter because there's still more chances to win, okay? So we've been studying the book of Galatians, as you guys know. Does anyone know what chapter we're in this week? You were fast, but you don't know.
Oh, no.
Okay, wait. What chapter?
3.
No, four. You were next.
4.
4, yeah. Oh, we're in chapter 4. And this one, there's multiple right answers. So if you can come up with any of them, then you'll get some points. What did we talk about last week?
This isn't fair. I wasn't here.
But some of your team was.
Talked about Peter's way of faith and walk, and how he believes more in faith and less about walk.
Yeah, that's definitely one of them. There's still more. What's up?
About the Bible.
You know what? You're not wrong, so I'll give it to you. But no more answers like that. Does anyone remember anything we talked about last week besides, so we had, Jacob said faith and works, right, that Paul's talking about faith and works and how important faith is in comparison to works. What's up?
You made, an example. You were, walking up a hill with, a box.
Yeah.
And the box was, extremely heavy and you couldn't carry it. Mm. So then eventually Pastor Jeff went down the hill to you and he said, I'm going to take these things from you, and he ended up carrying it for you instead.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That was good. That was good. Anyone else have anything they remember from last week as a part of the thing? It's okay if not. Just giving you all the chances. Okay. So, yeah. I put a couple of them up here. Just because you didn't say these things doesn't mean I didn't give you points. So, we talked about the law being a curse. Do you remember that a little bit? We talked about how the law is a curse because the law requires that we follow all of it. Right, so if you mess up on one of the 600 laws that are in the Old Testament, you've broken the law. And so Paul's like, you don't want to follow this law, trust me. Because I guarantee you every single day you're breaking some of these rules, right? Because we're not perfect. And then, so then we said, okay, why do we even have the law? Right, if it doesn't matter to us anymore, if we don't need it anymore, why did we ever have it? Right, and the purpose of the law we talked about was to expose sin. Right, has anyone here seen God's Not Dead, the movie? A few people. In that movie, he's trying to defend that God is real, right? And in that movie, one of his biggest defenses that he uses is that we know what's right and wrong, and someone had to teach us that, right? And so Paul's argument is the law teaches us right and wrong, right? Like, do not murder. It seems crazy, but at some point in time, we didn't, how would we know that was bad unless someone told us, right? When we knew nothing. And so then we talked about, okay, if the law's a curse, but we don't have it anymore, then what happened, right? We talked about how Jesus took our curse for us, right? He took upon himself the curse of the law, all the things we weren't going to do, so that we don't have it anymore. We talked about how that's a gift of grace, right? And that, kind of what Jacob was saying, we earn it by faith, not by works, right? Because Christ has done the works for us, and we can't do anything, so it's given to us. And then we ended by saying that if you were in Christ, you were free, right? And that's kind of what we emphasize a lot at the end. Okay. So, this is another chance. The question is, what is the true gospel Paul is defending? But if you can tell me, we've been kind of doing a certain illustration over the past 2 weeks. It's like an image that I've been putting up or talking about. Dang, okay. If you can, and multiple people can answer this one, but tell me a little bit about the true gospel.
Well, the image is a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And one side is you, the other side is God.
Yeah.
The cross, because we all connected when we sin, and the more we sin, we get less connected with God. But the cross, Jesus died on the cross, he brings us closer, so when we sin, we're still close to God.
Yeah. Dang, you've actually been listening to me, I can tell. This is great. Anyone have anything to add to that? Not that that wasn't great, because it was. Anything that stuck with you from this, the gospel, maybe putting it in a different way that stuck for you? Because spoiler alert, I'm just going to show you the picture again, so. describing this picture, right? We talked about us and God, right? We said that when we sin, because God is perfect and he knows no sin, we separate ourselves from God, right? And the only way to cover that, right, to make us right in the eyes of God is for there to be a sacrifice. So if you read the Old Testament, they would sacrifice animals and different things, and there was like all these rules about how they had to sacrifice it and who had to do it and all these things. But it was just this pattern, right? Because people would keep sinning and they would keep having to sacrifice. And it was exhausting. But there was this promise, right? God was like, one day I'm going to send the ultimate sacrifice so you don't have to do this anymore. So they kind of waited for years and years and years, and that ultimate sacrifice was Jesus, right? Who died on the cross, and because he was both fully man like us and fully God like God, he was the only mediator that could truly make that connection. Does that make sense? Right? Because he was both things at the same time, and no one else ever has been. And so he was able to defeat death, and then we're able to connect with God. Cool? So that is what Paul is defending in this letter, right? And that's what we've been talking about for the past 4 weeks. And I was kind of joking today. I was like, I feel like I'm talking about the same thing every single week. But that's the point, right? The point of Paul's letter is there's not any more to this. You can't add to this gospel, just like you can't take away from it. The gospel is not Jesus did this and then you guys can, you know, do some works and then it'll work. Like, no, this is it. Period, end of story. I could stop here and I'd be telling you the whole story of the Bible. It's this right here. It's that God loved you so much, he wanted that connection back and he sent his son. But we're still going to talk about it more. So we're going to be looking in Galatians 4 today. And we're going to be breaking it up into three sections because Paul's going to kind of use a few different ways to explain this concept and why it doesn't make sense for faith and works. And if you're tired of hearing about it, sorry, that's what we're talking about. So, all right, I'm going to read verses 1 through 11. So he's kind of continuing from last time. I'll debrief it once we're reading it. So he says, what I am saying is that as long as an heir is underage, he is no different from a slave, although he now owns the whole estate. The heir is subject to guardians and trustees until the time set by his father. So also when we were underage, we were in slavery under the elemental spiritual forces of the world. But when the time set had finally come, God sent his son, born of a woman, fully man, born under the law, like us, to redeem those under the law, that we might receive adoption of sonship. Because you are his sons, God sent the spirit of his son into our hearts, the spirit who calls out, Abba, Father. So you are no longer a slave, but God's child. And since you are his child, God has made you also an heir. Formerly, when you did not know God, you were slaves to those by whose nature are not God's. But now that you know God, or rather are known by God, how is it that you are returning to these weak and miserable forces? Do you wish to be enslaved by them all over again? And so Paul is using this example of slavery, because this is what would have been familiar to these people at this time, right? This concept of, like, he calls law-based religion, I kind of use the term spiritual infancy. So an infant, right? Little baby, right? And he's saying, when we were under the law, we were like infants. Right? We were just following rules. We weren't actually free. Right? We got Junior right back there. Right? She's got a whole heck of a lot of rules. Like, she can't put certain things in her mouth. She can't do certain things. Right? All of these rules that she has to follow. Right? She's not really free because she can't just do whatever she wants. Cass isn't going to just, like, let her walk out the door and go figure it out. Right? She's not ready for that yet because the proper things haven't been done. And so when we were under the law, it's like that. We had all these rules. Right? And even though, you know, Paul's saying eventually you're going to inherit all of these things, we don't have it yet. That's what's like under the law. But then at the right time, when Jesus came, he adopted us as his children. And because he was truly human, born of a woman, and under the law, he was perfectly ready to free us from it. Right? Because he's not a God that's up there, you know, just chilling far away from you. He came down with you. He felt all of those things. And so then it talks about, you know, us being freed from this. And then it says, so you are no longer a slave, but God's child. And since you are his child, God has also made you an heir. And what, like, he's talking about inheriting something. Does anyone have any idea of, like, what he might be talking about inheriting? Like, what do we inherit when we become followers of Jesus?
The right to go to heaven.
Yeah, salvation. We also become God's child, or we become a part of this family. And it says, we call God Abba or Father, right? And Abba was a term that to these people would have been known as like a very affectionate term that you would call like your dad, your actual dad. And now I know people have different relationships with their father. I can speak to that. But think of a father who just loves you unconditionally. Think of the prodigal son, right? This father that comes running out to meet his son, regardless of his mistakes, regardless of anything he's done. That's the kind of dad that we get to have when we are entered into God's kingdom. And we live as heirs to his kingdom, right? We get to inherit God himself. His spirit literally comes into us. He sends the spirit of his son, the son who died on the cross that we just talked about, that no one else can do. We inherit that. And so what's the key idea here, right? The key idea is don't go back to slavery when you've experienced freedom. He's like, don't put yourself back under the law when you've been freed from it. That doesn't make any sense. Like if we were gonna paraphrase what Paul is saying, he would literally be like, that makes no sense, right? That's foolishness, right? And we're talking, when we talk about the prodigal son, right? That would be like, if you guys aren't familiar with the prodigal son, right? There's a parable that, you know, Jesus tells to people about what it's like to be in relationship with God. And he says, you know, there was this son, and he said to his father, I want all of my inheritance, right? All the money that I'm going to get when you die, I want it now. And his father was very much alive. But his dad says, fine, you can have it all. And the son runs off and does all these foolish things with it, right? Runs out of money, runs out of hope. And he decides to come back to his father and say, like, listen, I've sinned. I'll just be one of your servants. That's kind of what Paul is saying here. Like, that's the same mentality. If we're going back to God and we're saying to him, I know you've given me everything. I know you have. But, like, I still have to do something, right? Somehow I still have something to give you. And it's not that we can't show God our love and affection. It's not that we don't worship God. It's not that we don't do servitude. But if we do those things with the mindset of the prodigal son, where it's like, I'm going to do these things to earn your love back. And what does the father say to the prodigal son? He's like, no. Let me put sandals on your feet. Let me put a cloak on you. Let me kill the fat, like the best cow we have, because I love you and I'm glad you're here. Right? And so when God doesn't want us to come to him saying, what can I do to make up for these things? He says, you're where you need to be. That's all I ask of you, right? To come to me, to allow me to take those burdens upon you, to realize you need me, right? When the prodigal son came back to his father, he admitted to his father, I need you, right? I can't do it on my own. I went and I tried. I spent all my money. I have no friends anymore. I have no family. I'm like, he was feeding the pigs. Like, he had nobody in life. And he went back to his father. And like, I don't know, I would have been pretty mad if I gave someone like a ton of money and they like told me like, oh, I wish you were dead. And then they like went off and squandered it all and came back and were like, so ran out of money. And that's the last thing. But God doesn't care if he's your last resort. He just wants you to come to him, right? Doesn't matter if you tried everything else. If you've been like the prodigal son, you're like, I've tried everything, right? And that's what Paul is saying. He's like, don't try to put yourself back in a position of working for God, working to earn God's love, right? You have been freed. You've been given all. And so he's going to move on a little bit, and he's going to talk about these people that are telling the Galatians that they need to work, right? Because he's not happy with these people, that's for sure. So he says, I plead with you, my brothers and sisters, become like me, for I became like you. You did me no wrong. It was because of an illness that I first preached the gospel to you, and even though my illness was a trial, you did not treat me with contempt or scorn. Instead, you welcomed me as if I were Christ Jesus himself. Where then is your blessing of me now? I can testify that if you could have done so, you would have torn out your eyes and given them to me. Have I now become your enemy by telling you the truth? Those people, talking about the people that are preaching a false gospel, are zealous to win you over, but not for good. What they want is to alienate you from us so that you may have zeal for them. Zeal is like a desire and excitement, and like being zealous for something is like really wanting it. So he's like, he wants you to, they're telling you this false gospel, not because they care about you, because they want the power, right? If they keep you trapped in the law, you're serving them and not God, right? If they convince you that this is true. And he says, it's fine to be zealous, provided the purpose is good, and to be so always, not just when I am with you. My dear children, for whom I am again in the pains of childbirth until Christ is formed in you, how I wish I could be with you now and change my tone, because I am perplexed about you. Right, so again, Paul is upset because he's saying these people don't care about you. Right, these people who are telling you this gospel that is not a gospel of grace, that's not a gospel that Christ died for you, they're just lying straight to your face, and they don't have your best interests at heart. And he's saying, even if you don't like me, like, he's kind of like, even if you think, like, you know, you're not even here, Paul, why should I care what you say? Care about the way that you felt when you first heard the gospel, right? And what he's saying is, like, I'm not perfect. Does anyone here, I'll give points if someone actually does know this. Does anyone here know Paul's story? Like, how Paul became a believer? Do you know?
Okay.
Sure, go ahead.
He was Saul, and then he was killing people who believed in God. And then one day, he saw a very bright light, and then he went blind. And then God was speaking to him, and then he became Paul and started. And then he started spreading the word.
Yeah, that's exactly how it happened. That's good. That was good. Yeah. So Paul knows firsthand what it means to be a not perfect Christian, right? And he's kind of pleading with them to understand that. Like, he's like, listen, I'm no better than you. Like, I'm not trying to come here as like a guy high and mighty and tell you I know everything because I'm amazing, right? He's like, what I do know is that I need Christ, right? And he's like, if I don't know anything else, I know that you need Christ, right? I put here legalism, which legalism means just like, almost worshiping the law, right? Which is kind of what Paul's talking about, like worshiping doing the right thing. It creates dependence on leaders, pastors, rulers, and not on Jesus, right? He's like, as soon as you are relying on these people to tell you who you are, relying on these people to tell you the gospel that's not true, you're relying on them and not Jesus who's died for you, right? You're mixing up where your loyalty is supposed to go. And he's not, like, Paul is angry, but he's not really hurt by them, he's concerned for them, right? Because he's like, this isn't the gospel. You could be free. And he's like, if you're going to be excited about something, if you're going to be zealous, right? If you're going to work really hard at telling people the gospel. Don't work really hard at trying to follow these 600 laws that don't matter anymore, right? And he's speaking kind of the truth. Has you guys ever heard about speaking the truth in love, right? Telling someone something that's true, even if it's hard to hear, but doing it in a loving way. Right, he's like, I know this might be hard to hear because this is not what you've been told. But I love you too much to tell you something that's not true. Right, I love you too much to let you think something that's not true. Right, that's where Paul's coming from with this. He's saying, I care so much about you, I want you to know the truth. And that's kind of the rigor that we can share the gospel with, right? I want to tell you about Jesus because I love you too much for you not to know about him. Right, I want to tell you about Jesus because I can't imagine not doing it. Right, and that's kind of how Paul is here. And so Paul's going to use one more example from the Old Testament. And I could read it to you, but I honestly think he makes it more confusing than it is. Does anyone know who Abraham is? Do you know?
I do, but I kind of forget.
That's okay. Do you know?
Is he in Genesis?
He's in Genesis, yeah. He's kind of like the father of faith.
Yes. Wait.
Do you remember his son?
Oh yeah, yeah, like a son that God told him to sacrifice, and like his first son that he didn't have a son.
Yeah.
And he was told to sacrifice him, and he was about to kill his son.
Yeah.
And God said, don't do it, I'm just testing
your faith. Yeah, I think we even talked about this, we might have talked about this story a few weeks ago. Yeah, does anyone know that Abraham had more than one son? You know?
He was seven.
He had two. But his Jacob had seven. From with one wife and then over there. Anyway, this is the point. But anyway, the point is, no, so Abraham had two. You're fine. Abraham had two, right? Isaac is the one that you're talking about. But there's actually a second one that he really wasn't supposed to have, right? So Abraham gets promised this son, right? There, God's like, you're going to have this child that you've been begging for years. And Abraham gets kind of impatient waiting for this kid. He's like, all right, God, like, I know you told me I'm going to have a son, but, like, it's been a few years, and, like, I don't think it's happening. So he decides to go have a son with his servant, right? Because he's tired of waiting for God, and I don't know if you've noticed a theme throughout the Bible, but usually that doesn't go well when people try to take God's plan into their own hands. And so Abraham has a son with this woman named Hagar before Isaac comes around, right? And she is the mother of Ishmael, who's not Isaac, obviously. But she was not promised this child, right? This child was promised to Abraham and Sarah. But Abraham takes this into his own hands. And the reason that Paul brings this up, because you're like, why does this matter? We're talking about faith and works, is Ishmael is, he compares it to like this idea of works, right? Of trying to do it on your own, right? Ishmael is like kind of an example of trying to earn God's love by being good enough, right? Trying to earn God's promise, right? He tries to put his own works in to get what God has already promised to him to happen, right? And a lot of times we do this, right? Maybe it's not like God promised you a child, but it could be like, oh, you know, God promises me, you know, salvation in the Bible, but I still feel like I have to earn it, so I'm going to go do all these things with the mindset that this is what earns me salvation, right? Living by a roost of rules and doing it your way. But Isaac, who comes along later, is kind of the example of trusting in God's promise, right? And I mean, God might have made individual promises to you. I hope you guys talk to God about your lives and your wishes and your dreams and pray to him about those things. And I'm sure he'll promise you things in your lifetime. But the biggest promise he's given us is believe that I died for you and you have your salvation, right? And so when we're thinking about trusting in God's promise and love, right, we're trusting in the promise that he tells us in this book, right, at the very core. That this gospel is true. And living by faith in Jesus, which makes us spiritually free, right? As opposed to living with this list of rules that we call the law, right? And letting God do it this way. Notice the word change. Right? We have it doing it your way. I'm doing something. And we have letting, which is a passive, right? My hands are off, right? Abraham did not need to go find someone else to have this child with, right? God promised him, I'm going to make it happen. But he tried to kind of take his hands on the wheel and tried to drive the car himself when God's like, let me do it, right? Carrie Underwood, Jesus, take the wheel, right? He tried to take the wheel back from God. And so often we do that, right? We're like, well, you know, God, I believe that you can do it, but like, don't worry, I won't make you. Let me just handle it, right? God doesn't want that. He doesn't want you taking the reins. You're not supposed to because he's got it. And so Paul uses this example of letting go. Right, literally, have you guys ever heard, like a lot of people will say like, be still. Be still is like multiple times, like be still and know that I am God throughout the Old Testament. It's literally God directing you to do nothing. He's telling you your action isn't actually an inaction. You're doing nothing, right? And he says, know that I am God. Be still, right? Don't do anything. And trust that what I have said is true. That's all he's asking. And it's so simple, but it's so hard, right? Because so often we're like, well, I can't see it. I don't feel like God is working this out, right? Abraham's like, you told me I'm going to have this kid, but like, it's been a few years and we're really old. Like, my wife and I, we're really old. We can't have these kids. Like, this just doesn't happen. All he had to do was know that God is who he says he is, right? That he's Alpha, he's Omega. He's the creator of the universe. He has all the power. Just knowing that is enough and having faith that that's true. And so my little reflection question for you guys today is if someone looked at your life, and this is just like, think about like what your life reflects, right? Would they see you trying to live like Ishmael, right? This son that, you know, Abraham kind of forced, like trying to earn God's love, trying to earn the things that he have already been given, or kind of like Isaac, where it looks like trusting God's promise. And maybe that's like a time to reflect on where are some places I'm not trusting God as much, and how do I learn to trust that God has done the things that he said he's done. I'll have some paper up here in just a second, or you can turn and talk to each other, but just reflect on this question in whatever way seems fit to you.